Welcome to the Talk with Tori podcast. I'm your host, Tori Jones, and I'm so glad that you're here. It's time to have some fun. On each episode, I will chat with a friend and we will share random life topics, tips and tricks, fun stories, and more serious stories filled with some real talk to make you laugh, maybe cry, make you think, but most of all, bring a smile to your face. We all have a story to share, so I hope you enjoyed this one. So grab your favorite Starbucks, a glass of wine, water, I don't care. You do you, girl, because it's time to peel back the layers and add a little spice to it. Hey, Nicole, welcome to Talk with Tori.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to get to talk to you. Y'all, she has quite a story and a mission and just such an amazing opportunity for each of you just to learn about something that you may have not known a lot about. And I'm so glad you reached out to me. She'll really tell you all about her, her passions and her experiences that she's gone through. So Nicole, I'm so glad that you're here today. Will you just kind of introduce yourselves to me and the listeners and tell us a little bit about you, your background, how you grew up, and if you have a fun story, fun fact, memory, anything you kind of want to share with the listeners.
Sure. Okay. So my name is Nicole. I live in Burlington, Ontario. So it's a small city about 45 minutes west of Toronto.
You're our first Canada guest.
So fun. I've spent most of my life here, apart from the 4 years I spent at school in St. Catharines, which is really close to Niagara Falls. So my schooling is in the arts, but what I do now is support people on their own grief journeys with virtual connection and counsel and by sharing conversations and encouragement on my podcast, where I chat with women who have either experienced grief themselves or found a way to move through it, and women who work with grief in some capacity for a living to offer professional advice. I married my husband, Neil, in 2012. We're celebrating 9 years of marriage this summer.
Congrats.
Thanks. And we currently have one daughter here earthside with us and five babies in heaven, some who we got to meet and some who we never got to meet. And they are the inspiration behind From Heaven and Hope, which is my company now. The fun story that I could think of was that back in high school, I was a huge fan of Dawson's Creek. Like, I mean, out of control, had a huge crush on Joshua Jackson, who's also Canadian. And I just loved it more than any TV show I can remember. And somehow I convinced my mom, it was just my mom and I growing up. My dad isn't in my life and I'm an only child. But I convinced my mom it was a good idea that for our summer vacation, we should drive to Wilmington, North Carolina, where they filmed it, stake it out for a week. And we did that. And we did it for two summers in a row, met some of the cast, toured the sets, ate at the restaurants, just basically sat outside a film studio for a week long. And my mom let me do it.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing. Yeah, they filmed One Tree Hill there, I think.
They did right after that. Actually, Chad Michael Murray, who was in One Tree Hill, was in Dawson's Creek one of the times that I went. And so I got to meet him. I have a picture with him.
I like love TV. So maybe I need to like go back and watch Dawson's Creek.
And it's a little different now.
Yeah, a little different.
It doesn't seem as great.
Well, I think that that's really, really neat that you did that. I mean, that's hilarious. Yeah. And they filmed like so many movies. I've got to get to Wilmington at some point to go check it out. But that's an amazing story that your mom let you do that. That's like the true definition of a supportive parent, even if they're not interested in it. So your story, Nicole, is so powerful. And the fact that you're strong enough to share it is amazing. You kind of mentioned about your babies that are in heaven now. You have a really difficult story and it's filled with a lot of loss, especially at your age and, you know, only at less than 9 years of marriage. So will you kind of walk us through your story and tell us a little bit more about that?
So after my husband and I got married, we waited a couple years to sort of try and start a family. And then basically decided in the fall of 2014 to remove basically any barriers that we had to prevent us from having a baby. And we were super lucky that at the end of 2014, without much trying, we got pregnant. I had a successful no drama pregnancy, delivered a seemingly healthy baby boy who we named Brady on September 4th, 2015. And then 8 days later, he left us. He suffered a lot in those final days. No one could pinpoint what was actually happening at our local community hospital. So we were moved on to our children's hospital, where it was discovered he had urea cycle disorder. This type of urea cycle disorder that he has is generally fatal in baby boys. And so they tried everything they could, and he fought even being so little. I mean, he made it through cardiac arrest, seizures, respiratory issues, dialysis in his head on a machine that wasn't built for a baby that little. But ultimately, we were forced to say goodbye to Brady on September 12th. And then following his loss, we had a lot of counsel from the staff at the Children's Hospital who basically informed us that this condition is genetic and that his type of urea cycle disorder is passed down on the mother's side. So I have it, but as a female, have very, very minor symptoms and that have been passed off as any number of things my whole life. But with that discovery, found out that each time we conceive naturally, we have a 75% chance of having a healthy baby or a carrier girl, meaning that we could have an unaffected boy, unaffected girl, or a carrier girl like me, or a 25% chance of having another boy with a disorder in which the outcome would be the same. So the only option to eliminate those chances is to have a baby with IVF with genetic testing of the embryo. And IVF in Ontario at the time was newly covered by our healthcare system. However, the wait for it was about 2 years, and we would still have to pay for the medication and the genetic testing, which was not covered. So after much back and forth, we decided to leave it to God and try again, thinking after all, 75% is in our favor. And in January 2016, we did find out we were expecting again. But this time we did a CBS test and found out that the second baby was indeed another boy with the disorder. So then we were forced to make this impossible decision. Do we keep this baby and let him suffer the same fate as Brady, or terminate this pregnancy and do not something that neither one of us ever thought we would ever, ever entertain? So you have these two impossible choices, but ultimately, through a lot of soul searching and prayers, we did come to the conclusion that as this baby's parents, we couldn't let him suffer. We ultimately knew that his fate was going to be the same. But after watching Brady suffer, we couldn't knowingly set him up for that. So we saved him the days of pain and said goodbye early. But we named him Levi because it means together or united. And we believed that he would be united with his brother in heaven, which brought us a little bit of comfort. But his loss was so lonely, and a whole other layer of grief having had to sort of make that decision. And I knew we couldn't do that again. I couldn't knowingly go into that again. So there we go. That was our decision to do IVF, because I wasn't going to knowingly go into that again. And I don't know if it's like this everywhere, but where I live, genetic testing isn't available at every fertility clinic. So it took some investigation and a lot of back and forth with doctors and fellows and whatnot. And we ended up going with the Ottawa Fertility Center. And if you're not from Ontario, the distance between where I live in Burlington and Ottawa is about 500 kilometers or about 310 miles. So about 5.5-6 hours for us to drive. But we did it. And after our first round of IVF and genetic testing, we had 4 healthy embryos to work with. So we were really happy with that. And naively, we were like, great, we'll have 4 kids. This will be wonderful. We don't have an issue getting pregnant, and we remove the variable that's a problem for us. Plus, we paid our dues. Like, we've been given the bad stuff. Like, there's no way we're going to be given anymore. Like, that's it. So, you know, we do the first transfer, and we got pregnant on that first transfer very happily. And then at 8.5 weeks, we lost that pregnancy in a first trimester miscarriage. And that was incredibly confusing because it felt like we had removed that genetic piece and we didn't even consider all the other factors that can create a miscarriage in the first trimester. And it's pretty common. So no one really bats an eyelash. It's just pretty surreal. So I had to have another procedure less than a year after Levi to allow that pregnancy to pass from my body. And a few months later, we tried again and were successful. And thankfully, we were given our daughter, Kyla, who was born in 2018, who's now 3 and wild and amazing. She's wonderful. We did try again when Kyla was about 1, and that transfer just didn't work, which is another weird and isolating feeling. So after all that, we were left with one more healthy embryo. So in July 2019, we used that last one, which worked, split, and became identical twins. And then at 9 weeks, we miscarried them and then had to have another procedure to allow them to pass from me as well. So all in all, 5 pregnancies, 6 babies, 3 that went into the second trimester, 2 live births, but only 1 living child today. So it's been a journey for sure.
Oh my goodness, Nicole. I'm so sorry that you've had to go through all that. And I can't imagine the continuous pain. I know, you know, in my story, that's definitely not anywhere near your story. You probably feel like it's like one thing after the other, like right when you feel like something good's going to happen, it's like, then there's unsuccessful things that happen. And just, it's just always probably a wondering process. So out of all the things you've been through, what do you think maybe has been the most difficult thing?
I think there's 2 parts to this. I think there are certain things that are really hard in the beginning, and then there are certain things that subside, and then later new struggles arise. Uh-huh. And so I think the hardest part about grief and when you lost, like a new loss, is to wrap your head around the fact that the world keeps spinning. Mm. Honestly, it's so hard. I remember my husband had given me a ring after Brady's birth, but it was a bit big. So a day or two after Brady passed away, my husband and I went to try and get it sized so that I could wear it to his memorial service. And on our way there, we were at a stoplight and a car pulls up beside us. And there's just a couple inside just having a conversation, smiling. They're like using arm gestures. It was completely normal. And I remember thinking, and I actually think I said it out loud, like, how can they just be talking? How can they just be acting like nothing happened? So I think in the beginning, the hardest thing to comprehend is just that even though your world stopped, like the world does keep spinning, and you've got to find a way to kind of live within that world. And that's definitely the hardest in the beginning. But that said, like after time passes, that piece becomes a bit more raw because you learn there are still good pieces in your life, even though there's this big hole, there's our good things to hold on to. But after time, I think for me, the hardest thing to handle is that people assume that since you've managed to make it through, and since it's been maybe a year, 2 years, whatever, that your grieving is over. So it's hard to articulate that pain is still there and that triggers still come. And I think that someone who hasn't experienced the same degree as grief perhaps assumes that there's an expiry date on it and you should just get over it. But you just like physically can't do that. And sometimes triggers happen in the weirdest and sometimes worst times. And your response is somewhat out of your control, especially with instances of PTSD, which is what I was diagnosed with shortly after, well, Brady. And so I think in the beginning, it's more about understanding that the world is still moving around you and people's lives are still going to go on. And then later on, it's creating an environment where people understand where you're at, because it can be really confusing and hard to understand. And then by extension, you don't feel supported.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let me ask you a question. You know, you have a beautiful daughter, a 3-year-old, and, mm-hmm. you know, you may have kids in the future, may not. I know we talked about that, just still navigating that decision. And mm-hmm. so have y'all figured out how to bring your child's other siblings up in conversation, or what is your advice to people in that way? Because that's been a question I've gotten a lot, like through loss or through different things. Like, how do you still make that a part of her life?
Mm-hmm. Well, and we talk about them a lot. Like we talk mm-hmm. about Brady and Levi more because they have names. Like we can associate mm-hmm. them. It's harder for her to understand that we had 2 other losses of 3 other
But she
babies.
Knows she had 2 brothers.
She knows that, yes. In any way that a 3-year-old can. She knows their names are Brady and Levi. She can point to pictures that we have of Brady or of Levi's footprints, and we have mementos from them, and she'll say, it's Brady or it's Levi. And they both of them are also worked into our bedtime routine, like in a song we sing, as well as a friend of mine's daughter who have become super close. All 3 of them that are now live in heaven are kind of part of our bedtime routine. We talk about them and they're in our little song. And so she knows about them. And it was actually Levi's birthday, or heavenly birthday, few days ago. And so she knew that she woke up as Levi's birthday. So, so she knows.
I always think that's interesting how to navigate that because, you know, you have your own grief, but your child, as they grow up, has their own grief and learning and all of that too. So what also one thing that I really admire about you is how passionate you are about sharing how to navigate marriage and loss. And what advice do you have for people in this area? Because obviously your marriage is going to look totally different when you've experienced something like this.
Yeah, this one's so tough. I mean, we've all seen the statistics. I mean, marriage or any partnership after a life event, like good or bad, creates change. So again, good or bad. So for us, I mean, I can pinpoint a few key moments and things that we actively did to keep going, but I'll just start by saying it's just hard. It's hard because no two people grieve in the same way. And yet you're living in the same house. Your lives have been equally affected and you're grieving the same loss. So it's like, you're trying to acknowledge and honor your own feelings, but trying to keep your marriage together and truly not understanding how the other person can behave the way they are. And I don't mean behave like they're doing anything wrong, just behavior you truly don't understand following a loss. So for me, after Brady's loss, I wanted to retreat and rest and basically sit with my thoughts and with God. And this is in fact when I found my faith the strongest. I really didn't want any distraction. I wanted my focus to be on Brady, whereas Neil is a doer. It made him feel better to do things. He wanted to play baseball. He wanted to be around people, which just simply didn't make sense to me. But that's not because it was wrong. That's just because that's not how I was navigating it. But there were a few things that happened in the hospital before Brady took his last breath, but we knew that what the outcome was going to be. That speak to me and speak to this. And one of them was that the nurses in the hospital came up to us and told us that we were going to be okay. And she had said that she'd seen this before and that she knew we were going to be a couple that makes it. And I don't know why, but that always stuck with me as something like, okay, well, we need to prove her right. Mm-hmm. And then also in the hospital, Neil and I both decided to do two things, surface level things, but we decided to both get tattoos like in memoriam and go away for Christmas. And it was September. So it sounds super weird. And like I said, surface level, but because we said it out loud and we followed through. So we both got our first tattoos in honoring Brady and we booked a trip away to Mexico for Christmas, two kind of normal life things that just brought us together as a couple. So even in the months, if the moments in between felt a bit disconnected, we had these benchmarks that could ground us and were a common goal and event. And getting out of the country for the holidays was a really good thing for us because it allowed us to escape the often, you know, kid-centered holiday, as well as allowed us to have a full week just literally being with each other, which was really healing. And then following Levi's loss, it was a bit more complicated, but like not at the same time. Levi was, for me, was the same as Brady. Like I saw him, I felt him, my body felt like it had just given birth. Whereas for Neil, Levi was more a loss of what could be, if that makes sense. I mean, he still felt the loss, but for dads, it's different. You know, they say mothers become mothers the moment they see the test, but dads become fathers when they hold their babies. So, I mean, he never really got to have that with Levi. So in one way, Levi's loss felt really lonely, but it was also good because because it allowed Neil to just support me because he wasn't grieving quite as intensely as he had with Brady. And then following the miscarriage, it was somewhat the same, albeit more confusing and exhausting as time went by. But generally speaking, it was more individual and I just felt support from my husband. But then moving back to when we went away after Christmas, we started seeing a grief counselor together. And this was imperative for healing. We definitely did this. And I still go by myself sometimes just to manage some anxiety that has arisen since all this. But this was good just because it was an open floor for any feelings and allowed for a moderator to ensure no blame was placed. So I would definitely be an advocate for counsel in some capacity, whether it be through the funeral home, through your church, through just a professional service, just anybody that could advocate for both of you and provide an open floor. The other interesting thing that we decided to do that ended up being extremely grounding was we hosted a memorial golf tournament with proceeds going back to the Children's Hospital. So we decided at the beginning that we would do it for as long as it made sense. And we did it for three years back to back and had a total of just over $61,000 going back to the hospital.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was great. It felt really unifying and it brought everybody together, and we were able to have speakers come from the hospital and speak about Brady's case or speak about a different case. It was really, really nice. And it created a different connotation for the hospital, which was really nice. And then we took a year off and we did a Children's Hospital run fundraiser. And then last year we were going to host another one with our friends who also lost their daughter. We were going to change the name and do it again under a different banner, but then COVID hit and we couldn't do that. So we haven't done one since, but this was really significant for us because it gave us something to do together, something to be proud of, creates a positive association with the hospital, like I said. And most of the people I talk to each week on the podcast say that some element of awareness or fundraising for a cause has been extremely healing for them personally and as a couple. So now, I mean, our token line is, we got through that, we'll get through anything. So even if we have a marriage low point or we're in a spat or someone's frustrated about something, it's just comforting to know that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. We've got through possibly the worst trauma and we're still standing. So yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of things that go through to managing a marriage after loss, but those would be my kind of top takeaways for how to kind of push through.
That is really great advice. And I love that it's tangible things like giving back. A fundraiser is healing. I would have never thought about that. And then one thing I loved is when the nurse just said, y'all are going to make it. I think that's the best reminder of anything in life, to speak life into people. And you never forgot that. And you were always like, I'm going to keep pushing through. I mean, you may have not even known the nurse that well, and you don't even know what she's maybe up to right now, but that speaking life into people, no matter the circumstance, is just so important. And I loved how you said grief is so different for people, because even if someone hasn't lost a child, but people are going to have loss in some way in their life, and everyone is going to experience it differently. And I think that was a really, really great point that you said. So thank you for sharing all of that. I know it's going to help so many people.
Yeah, no problem. I actually interviewed someone else, and another thing of advice that she said that was really beneficial was, I don't know if it was a counselor or something, said to her, she said, don't make any big life decisions within the first year. Like, don't sell your house, don't get divorced, don't buy any property, don't do anything big in the first year until you kind of have surpassed that thing.
Yeah. And then another thing you said was so interesting, because I've heard that advice before about booking a trip for Christmas. One of our first guests on the podcast, for everyone to listen to, Tilting Your Traditions with Carrie Dodson, she talked about how her family went through a lot of life changes, whether it was divorce and moves and marriage and all the things. And they realized their holidays were not going to look the same. So if they tried to be at home and make it the same, it was going to be harder. But if they just left and it accepted, this is going to be different, then that was going to help them have a better holiday. Mm-hmm. And I just thought you saying that too, like how great that is. Like sometimes you just don't have to do the traditional things, because that's really hard. So switching that up is so good. So what advice do you have for someone who has lost a child? I have many friends that have, and I can't imagine that pain, because I hurt so much, but I can't even imagine their hurt. And also someone who may lose a child one day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first thing, just to, as a general note to remember, is that grief is built from love, right? You can't have grief without really, really big love. And so I've said this before to some friends, like if I were to tell you like, okay, you just won't be grieving tomorrow, like that would hurt more, because that means that you've forgotten about them, or your love isn't the same, and that doesn't feel better. So you have to feel the grief that you feel, because you have to feel the love that you feel. And that's special. And nobody wants to have a child, lose a child, whatever, without love. So That's the first thing. That's just like a general takeaway, and to remember that, because that's really important. And to not try and kind of dull it, like to try and really find a way to work through it, because if you kind of dull it with medication or anything, and I'm not saying don't medicate, you know, if that's what you need to do, do it, but don't do it to numb the pain, because when you come off of it, that grief is still going to be there. So you have to kind of work through it. But one of the reasons why I created From Heaven and Hope is because of basically one statement that my cousin said to me. She had lost her mom a while back, and after I lost Brady, she had said this to me, and I can't remember exactly when. She said to me, "If I could show you, I wish I could show you your life in 5 years, because it'll look totally different." And she was absolutely right. And it's not that the pain isn't there, or that the hole in your heart isn't there, or you don't still miss them. It's just that your ability to move forward and move through things is completely different 5 years later, but you have to get to the 5 years. So to anybody who has lost or will lose a child, is to, number one, honor that grief is built from love, and then take care of yourself and your own grief, and find the good moments, find the things in your life that are worth making it to 5 years. Because when you look back at 5 years, you'll realize like, oh, well, even for me, like, and a lot of stuff has happened since Brady that was, you know, a storm, like has been basically a storm, but I can still look back and there's still a reason to have gone through it, right? There's still lots of really amazing pieces that have happened in those 5 years, and you can find them. You just have to move through. And then I would just also advocate again for finding something that makes you, that allows you to honor them, whether it be a golf tournament, or you get, you know, anything you can do to honor them, to keep their name kind of present and in your heart and in other people's heart, that'll probably make you feel better, more like able to cope a bit better.
That's amazing advice. I love that you said grief's from love. That's so true. And I never thought about it in that way of like, when I'm hurting, it's because of the love. And so that's really, really relatable. And I know people are really going to take a lot of hope from that. Mm-hmm. So one thing I think is so cool on this podcast is we really talk a lot about how to comfort others going through things. So many people on this podcast have gone through things, and, you know, not everyone else has, but people always want to help. And so what would you say are maybe some examples of how people have comforted you well in an area of loss, and maybe some things not to do, maybe some things that really just have made such a difference in your life? I know one of the hardest things is a lot of people don't know what to do, and they don't know what to say, and so they don't do anything. Mm-hmm. And so if you could kind of help us in that area, because I know so many people want to help others through grief.
Right. Well, I mean, that's absolutely true. People, you just don't know what to say. And I think you can't fault yourself for that. If you haven't been through the same thing, there's just absolutely no way you would know what to say. But the important thing to do is to say something. Mm-hmm. Because if you just disappear, then it looks worse and they feel worse. So we have lots of amazing friends, and from different groups, times, et cetera, like just amazing, amazing friends, and very, very few disappeared. So I can point to a few specific things that they did that were just really spectacular. And then a few kind of less spectacular, more tangible things. But one thing that I think was really, really logical, I talked about this in the podcast I did with my husband a few weeks ago. Our friends found a way to help us in this really, really practical way in the really early days following Brady. So a friend had met us for lunch. He had asked us to go for lunch. So we met him for lunch. It was one of our first outings. And when we showed up back to the house, there was an envelope stuffed in the door, and he obviously didn't do it, but we know he was involved. And we opened it up, and it was a letter, like a typed letter, basically saying, all of us have come together. We love you. We want to do this for you and help you pay for the cost of Brady's memorial. And so then we opened it up, and it was, I'm like tearing up talking about it. I still do. And we opened it up, and it was like a certified check for like several thousand dollars. And it just said your friends. It didn't identify who it was. We still don't know which friends came together and made that amount. And it was just so helpful and like, just so practical, like just such an easy thing. Like we just took that thing right down to the funeral home and just paid them. And that meant that that didn't, and that took away probably a third of the cost of his memorial. And I mean, it wasn't necessary. I mean, you don't have to do that, but that was just, if anybody is looking for something really practical and really helpful in the really early days, I mean, that was something that was really powerful and very helpful and very unifying, because it was clear from the amount that it was not like four friends. It was probably like all different friends from all different groups and found a way to come together for us, which was amazing. And then another thing that Neil's baseball team and all the families did was bought us a memorial tree in one of our local parks. So there's a plaque on it for Brady and for Levi, because they ended up getting it planted in the spring. So it was after Levi, actually. So both their names are on it. And that was amazing, because Brady is cremated. And of course, Levi, we don't have any. We just have a picture of his feet. That's really all we have. So it's nice to have somewhere outside in the fresh air where Kyla can run and play and be by their tree. And that's something I've done for someone recently too, is with a bench though, is like not me myself, like with a bunch of other people coordinated that, because it truly is really nice. That's a really nice thing to do for somebody. But I think the main thing is to just action, just keep checking in, to not leave it up to them to figure out what they need. Just come up with some things that you're willing to do. You know, can I hire a housekeeper? Can I come clean your home? Can I do your laundry? Can I drop off dinner? I'm outside. Let's go for a short walk. Anything really that can bring them into their life for a short time, not a distraction, just a support. And then things that would make their life logistically easier, especially if they have kids. You could offer to babysit, take, you know, give their kids a bath, put them to bed, take kids to the park for a couple hours, things like that. Honestly, grand gestures are so amazing. Like the check and the tree are just like things that we could never ask for. And they're so special, but they're not necessary. I mean, the main thing is that you just don't disappear or, you know, throw a big party for yourself in the days following. I mean, that's really all that's needed. Just let them be the focus for a little bit and just be there and ready to go whenever they need you. That's the key.
What are some words that you think are good to say to someone in a time of grief?
I mean, nothing's going to take the grief away. So again, my advice usually to people is to just keep checking in. Hi, just checking in. I don't need a response.
That's
just
what I like hi, to say. Yeah.
Just saying hi, just checking in. And then, you know, if you're really concerned or if you really haven't heard from somebody, I would just show up, you know, maybe, you know, not the week after, but maybe the month after, just say, I'm outside. I brought you a coffee. I went to Starbucks. Like, are you home? Like, and then maybe they meet you outside on the porch for just 2 minutes and you just say hi and you just ask, are they doing okay? You know, it's the main thing not to say is to create a situation where they end up supporting you, right? Because I feel like sometimes as friends, as family, you know, you're grieving too. If someone that you love has experienced a loss, you're hurting too. And so you might come to them and say, you know, I've been so worried, or I felt this way, or people have asked me about you. Like, I wouldn't say things like that, or I feel so guilty because I have this child and you don't, like nothing like that. Like, I would say, don't say that, because then they end up comforting you. And that's the opposite. You just have to kind of be available to receive whatever they are putting out there. And also to not take offense to anything, because some people's grief comes out a little bit defensive, and it's not because they don't love you. It's just because they're hurting.
That's great advice. So you've made your story your passion, Nicole, and I'm so impressed with that. And just your strength is going to change the lives of so many people. Like, I mean, I just feel inspired thinking, like, looking at your life in 5 years, like, that just is going to give people so much hope. So you really have made your life a life of helping others through your loss and through the things you've gone through. So I know you have a lot of services and a lot of resources. So where can someone find you? What all do you have to offer? And where is all of that located?
Yeah, of course. So my website for connection. So if you want to chat or if you need any counsel on anything regarding grief or struggle, you can go to fromheavenandhope.ca. And if you want to listen to the podcast, all of the episodes in the show notes with pictures and links can be found at fromheavenandhopepodcast.ca. And then I'm just on Instagram at fromheavenandhope.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I am so thankful you shared your story with all of us. And I know so many people need to hear it. And people are also going to hear this that don't know this is going to be their journey in the future. And this is just going to give people such from heaven and hope, just this way of being able to help others too. Mm-hmm. So let's switch gears a little bit and have a little bit of fun. I'm going to ask you the question I ask everyone at the end of every episode of Talk with Tori. So tell us three of your current favorites, must-haves, recommendations that you think all the people need to know.
Okay, this was fun. I'm an essential oil lover and I love my oils. I have my oils with me all the time. But my current favorite to diffuse is a blend called Anchor, and it's from our yoga collection. And it's a blend of lavender, cedarwood, frankincense, cinnamon, sandalwood, black pepper, and patchouli.
How do you remember that? Wow.
I have it written down. it's wonderful. It's grounding. It smells like the beach to me. That's my favorite blend right now. And then I recently upgraded my Bible to a She Reads Truth Bible, and I'm loving that. I love that it has devotionals and scripture reading plans. And also love that it's just a beautiful book. You can put it on your coffee table and it just looks nice.
Yeah.
And then I think my favorite recipe on rotation often in our house is vegan burrito bowls. So obviously you could add some meat if you're a carnivore, but yeah, vegan burrito bowls, quinoa, black beans, corn, sweet potato, onion, peppers, avocado, and a little chipotle lime vegan mayo. So
yum.
Good.
Yum. So are you fully vegan?
I'm vegan, but I have slipped a couple times. I have to admit. not with the meat. I've never been a carnivore, but with the dairy, like sometimes it'll be in something I'm generally yes. Yeah.
That is amazing. Well, I'm impressed because my husband eats so much meat, so he would probably freak out, but I can do the full vegan bowl because I love veggies and all of that. I'm definitely going to have to go maybe make a burrito bowl tonight. So
do it.
Well, thank you, Nicole, for everything you shared with us, all your goodness, all your knowledge. And I can't wait for everyone to be able to listen to your podcast and hopefully refer other people as well to the great things that you have going on. So thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Tori. This was really nice.
If our episode today touched you, inspired you, or brought you some good laughs, we would be honored if you subscribed to the Talk with Tori podcast and left us a quick review. This will give others who are scrolling through the podcast apps the ability to find us. Please share this with all the people in your life so more friends can hear our stories. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope this episode brought you joy, love, and spice.